next case is 97-2247, State of Ohio versus Gregory Bay. Obviously, recusing himself from this case, and we're going to have sitting for Justice Resnick, Judge Thomas Brady, who is the judge of the Court of Appeals for the Second District of the Court of Appeals. For the vote.
Yes, you court warning for the counsel. I'd like to say, of course, permission to have this rebuttal. Mr. Gamble, myself will be dividing the term.
Weren't there a lot of similarities between these two homicides, and if there were, doesn't that fall under 404B plan?
You know, suggest that there were similarities, but the similarities that are present in these two homicides are similarities that are present in any homicide. The fact that a knife was used is not typically unique. The fact that it was a robbery is not typically unique. The fact that somebody died in the course of the robbery was a knife.
How about the pants and the shoes?
That, you would agree that that is arguably a distinctive feature between the two homicides. But that is the only feature that is distinctive between the two. And in examining the trial court's opinion, you can see that the trial court focuses in on the fact that a knife was left in the chest, which, again, you would suggest, while it's not a nice thing, it's not a particularly unique thing when somebody's robbed or there's robbery, when somebody is killed. No, I would disagree, of course. But, you know, one of the things that the trial court did not do, and what the U.S. Republicans suggested the trial court do,
is that there was plenty of evidence pointing to the conviction of the crime. I would have the similarity to that happening.
Yes, specifically a couple of words on two facts. First, there was a palm print that was found on the window case that, if you examine the record, something like this, where the body was lying, that part of it was just stolen. Part of that store, the employee, Mr. Myers, testified without contradiction that after he finished his work at the end of the day, he had sprayed all the glass tables off with Windex or whatever, cleaned them off for his hair. So he saved it from Mr. Brian Bates, suggesting that he was there. He had conceded at a minimum that there had been an altercation, verbal at least, if not physical, himself and Mr. Singleman's victim. And finally, what he said about his the reason he was in that store itself was completely and flatly contradicted by Mr. Myers.
Well, the other thing is he'd been there before and they recognized him.
Yeah, nobody had seen him, that Mr. Myers did not see him at a prior to the time that Mr. Myers left and when he had cleaned up all the playgates. So Mr. Brian Bay, I think there was still a substantial evidence to suggest that Mr. Bay had been there. But his own statement, the fact that he was probably there after Mr. Myers left, all that meant that he was dangerous, and would have, who knows, it could have resulted in conviction or not.
Well, it would get out, it's pretty thin. I mean, if you were convinced, Jeremy, you'd feel better than ordinarily about your chances, the chances of your own. Well, going in, if that's all you've got.
Well, I think focus, though, shouldn't be on whether that's in some way indicate a mistake. Focus should be on whether it provides one of the elements for 4B, and at the same time, if it does not, under the presence of the defendant, it would disclose the value of that, is not outweighed by
the defendant. Well, it's not a question. The defendant is convinced. But I think the hard part of this case is it sure looks like it was awfully necessary.
Right.
Or else it's
observe the presence of sobriety, not only at the trial phase, but at the second phase, the negation phase. And this again was the self-evident for his affluent and the other.
Thank you, Mr. Kovach. Mr. Gaines, thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Kevin. Your own business is taking the religion to get up for the other struggles to the drug. And put that in the context of mitigation along with the collection of arrogant and pride to be addressed the problems along with the and the collection to be addressed the problems along with the age. What I'd like to suggest is, first of all, it is our position that the 404B evidence was not necessary, that in fact the case was an appearance to represent that the case has been described as a very common concept. Having said that much, well, I'm just going to look at mitigation. When we have mitigation in this case is frank.
Wait a minute, before you go to that, because I'm having trouble understanding that argument of both of you. I thought Justice Pfeiffer was making a real point for you, and you seem to be fighting it for some reason. And so I guess I don't understand that. If, in fact, the case was strong enough to convict without the 404 problem, then it's over. If the evidence, State v. Williams says, if it's clear the evidence is strong enough, then it's harmless error.
What would suggest is that I think, once again, I can't say I'm concerned with not a little bit of trust. What I'm suggesting is that there's a prejudicial impact for the evidence that goes beyond the guilt phase of trust as part of what comes up in the mitigation. And further, in light of Poston, what we one of the things that we look at is alternative means of establishing the same point. When we look at bringing in highly prejudicial other offensive evidence, particularly unusual other offensive evidence, by the way, because the other offense occurs after the offense, several months after the prior trial, the evidence which was brought in this trial was actually for a later offense, although they were indicted together. The underlying fact is already in front of the jury. Once it's there, why not go to the mitigating part that comes with it? But we have to get in the mitigating strength by instruction from the judge. The judge instructs the jury at both the beginning and the close of mitigation in virtually identifying that first she tells them that factors of mitigation are factors which effectively reduce the degree of defendant's blame or punishment in the past. This court has repeatedly said, of course, that the reference to blame in that language is improper, is not standing by itself, the first act is improper. She then goes on to instruct the jury, both at the beginning and the close of mitigation, that there are a number of potential mitigating factors, and she lists history, character, and background, the offender nature, for example, he doesn't then list the B1 through 7 factors that set forth for God to show with special definitions and without which I think that's the sort of which mitigating factors and if she gets that information. So what we have is a jury that on its way into hearing the mitigation case is given a look. These are things she's been looking for. They may not all be projections, she says, but these are things she's been looking for. And at the close of mitigation, when the jury is sent off to deliberate, they're told, and these are things she's been looking to see if you heard it. The only mitigating evidence in this case is presented with the 14th of heaven, making all the fixed stuff inappropriate. And that problem is compounded by the prosecutor did, both in his opening statement of mitigation and in his closing argument of mitigation. Which is to say, what you need to do in this case, which is the opening statement finally, is to find out if this defendant presents enough of these mitigating factors to outweigh the sheer hard conduct. It's accounting.
Yes. Is that an OJI instruction? I can't remember seeing whether the trial court has instructed prior to mitigation.
In this case,
that you must look for the B1 through 7 factors. Not in this case, in any case.
There are transcript references in the brief that are doing that.
Yeah, you know, I don't doubt you did it. I'm just saying. We're not arguing about that. I'm asking you, is it an OJI instruction?
I do not believe that OJI suggests that one should do that. So it's two of your things you have done. What she wants to do, I think, not unreasonably, although in this case it doesn't have a question of surprise, what she wanted to do was to keep the jury from guys going into the usual for them. Mitigation is something that is beyond the ordinary television watching experience of the typical juror. The experience that you see in when you report here, you have to make a certain jury report. Never hear people, but here we are. You have to take one open day that never comes up. The second stage of the trial is an unusual thing. I think the judge wants to call the jury out, and I think what he did was to grill up.
Well, I'm not telling you what it should have been brought for.
guy was there at some point.
He didn't call the door for the night. Counsel, I noticed that the court's instructions to the jury on weighing the aggregating circumstances and mitigating factors that set out at page 53 of your brief, at least a portion of the instruction, they look as though the court is trying to track the statute 29-29-03-D2, but it makes no mention of reasonable doubt as the basis for making that determination. Did the court otherwise instruct the jury that reasonable doubt was the standard call?
There is a reasonable doubt instruction elsewhere in the instruction. We think there's a problem with that instruction. On page 53, there's not that problem. That problem resolved elsewhere in the instruction. What I want to suggest is that there's among the things that distinguish the case from it is in fact the case that the wealth of stuff that we're talking about in Proposition 1278, the vast majority of those things do not object to this problem. We understand that you're looking at plain error. What I want to suggest is that this is a remarkable case where we have some evidence about plain error. We have some evidence of what was done. Because several months earlier, in the same court, with the same defense, with the same judge, in a trial with the same aggravating, the same single aggravating circumstance, the aggravating murder committed in court, an aggravated robbery, and so forth. In a case which the state of Ohio believes to have been virtually identical, with, if inconceivable, more mitigation, presumably the same mitigation. Same county in Lucas County in 1993 on what is essentially the same day, but absent what we believe to be the enterprise here, certainly absent for what will be absent here. Jurors return the right verdict. Verdict life against this same defendant. And we would suggest that this court will rarely find, any court will rarely find, a clearer case to explain why it is that here we have plain error. W. Reserve, I have a lot of time.
Thank you, Scanzo. Mr. Kirsten.
Thank you.
strong evidence that without showing the other murder, it might not be a death penalty case. Better not be your strongest argument. Oh, okay. But he ought to have a right to present whatever he wants to present, and without you.
Bargaining this it's out there, I think it's life sentence, even if it's one, then none of us would be.
Cases that you have seen, have you seen a trial judge instruct at the inception of the mitigation stage on the mitigating factors ever before? For instance, did it happen in the other murder, in the other case? The reason I ask you is because when you think about it, when it goes through the steps, if, in fact, the defendant doesn't present lack of a criminal record or age or mental defect or whatever it might be, then could not the jury at the end say, well, the judge says that he was supposed to present 1 through 7 and didn't, therefore, instead of it being mitigation, it becomes, in effect, aggravation and goes on the aggravating side. She did. She said even more than that. She said, this is what you should be looking for. Yeah. That the issue is, should she have done it, and should we say something about that? Because when you think it through, it becomes no presentation of any evidence on A4, therefore, or B4, therefore, must not be there. And the judge said that we ought to look for these, and if they aren't there, that means. Yeah, what it means is it goes on the other side of the scale when it's supposed to be mitigation. Oh, but in the negative, it's not there, so therefore there's no mitigation for him. Okay, it just seems to me it could skewer the weighing process, but I haven't thought it through until right now. Say it's not a good practice? All right, well, that's all I'm asking you to discuss, I think.
Yeah.
just repeated what we said to a large extent in Wilkinsville, what we said in Depew. Who was there in Depew?
Well, Lieutenant John and John, unfortunately, the South Corps was that once the defendant qualified, they attempted the justification of the defendant. I think it's the mark. So, that's one thing the law makes a change.
We say that the trial judge should not instruct on the mitigating factors in pre-instructions in the mitigation phase. I don't think so. What we said in Depew was that those are factors that had to be considered, but we didn't say anything about instruction. I don't know that I've ever seen an instruction in a death penalty case starting at the inception of the mitigation phase, talking about look for all these factors. Because it just seems to me, just without going back and reading it and looking at it, it just seems to me that I'm going to be sitting there looking for these factors if I'm a juror. Oh, well, they aren't there. Exactly. I think that would be a possibility. No objection either.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Kokovic, you've saved about 12 and a half minutes. Gansel? Okay.
Assembly set forth in Chapter 29 of the Revised Code. We are, this is
what happened in this case on these facts, as set forth here, given the peculiar things that occurred in this trial, are those things such that we can have confidence that the mitigation phase verdict in this case is reliable? We would submit to you that the answer to that is no. And the no that comes from that is clear.
Point, Justice Stratton's point is that that evidence goes to not, it is he who does this kind of stuff. It is this defendant who does this kind of stuff. That is, her point is that it wasn't that he was there, it's that he does these sort of murders. He murdered another person this way, it is he who did this.
I believe, or I won't swear to this, but I believe.
agree with the other one, Judge. Great. And here it is. And here it is. You know what happens if you don't get an answer.
Refer Mr. Pearson to 38 Ohio State 3rd at page 289, and you also, the State v. DePue matter, which very specifically talks about the court not only not charging on it, but not the prosecutor not even making reference to any mitigation factors not actually in evidence. And that was in 1988.
This was not the first capital case to have come along under Ohio law. The court, the prosecutor, the defense counsel, who did not finally and properly object to something, they should have known. There's a body of law that told them how they were supposed to do this.
Okay, and so the case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Second brief recess.
All rise.